It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In a few days, Pennsylvania will finally have its first complete budget since last June, a fiscal year 2015-2016 budget in place nearly 9 months late. Governor Wolf, facing pressure from state-funded agencies and fellow Democrats, says he will allow a $6 billion funding plan to become law, but without his signature, because he says the budget is unbalanced and bad for the state.
I cannot in good conscience sign this bill. I cannot in good conscience attach my name to a budget that simply doesn't add up.
And the governor is vetoing the fiscal code, often referred to as the budget user's manual. So what exactly will that mean going forward? I'm joined now by phone from Harrisburg by Pennsylvania House Speaker Mike Terzai. Mr. Speaker, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
I'm guessing that you are relieved to finally have this done. How would you describe your feelings today?
I'll tell you, it's a significant win for the citizens of Pennsylvania on so many fronts. As you know, the governor was holding students, and others hostage for an ideological increase in spending that was unaffordable and irresponsible, along with the taxes to come with it. You know, the governor, at a minimum, wanted a $30.8 billion spend for this 15-16 year. As you know, the spend is a little over $30 billion. We saved, essentially, taxpayers $750 million to $800 million in spending for 15-16 that would have all in discretionary spending, including walking around money that we had eliminated back in 11-12 when we took the majority. And that would have exacerbated any gap moving forward in 16-17 by over $1.5 billion. It was just not sustainable. And we had to bring fiscal discipline to the table, which we did. And by not growing that spending at that kind of a rate above and beyond what was affordable was really the crux of the issue over the last year. You know, and the public may remember, we put a balanced budget on the governor's desk in June. We did a budget in September. We did a budget in December. And we did a budget in March. As my chief of staff, Karen Coates, likes to say, and it's true, under the prior administration, we did four on-time budgets since taking back the majority in 4 years. We put four budgets on this governor's desk in less than a year. And there was no need for the massive tax increases for this increase in discretionary spending that he wanted. The key was is being fiscally responsible with the money that was coming in for 15-16.
Well, when you say that the governor held the state hostage, your colleagues in the Senate were willing to end this, and you and your colleagues in the House were not. In December, there was a chance back on December 23rd. The state Senate approved a budget with the education funding that the governor wanted. They sent it to the House for a vote, and you and other House Republicans walked out without voting, which ended up prolonging
that's completely
stalemate.
Accurate. You don't even have the facts correct.
Well, that's what happened. Is it not what happened, Mr. Speaker?
It's not what happened. And if you'll let me tell you, you're dead wrong on your facts.
Sure. Well,
go ahead. The Senate passed on December 8th a $30.2 billion budget, would spend about $600 million less, also had many of the compromises. And we'll talk about the education increases in just a second. And the Senate had to decide whether they were going to pass a tax package, because they had already sent over a spending package, but they did not send over a tax package to meet the $800 million more in spending over the 30.0 or the $600 million more over the 30.2. But they didn't have the votes to send over the tax package. That's the issue. So what the Senate ended up doing, and it really ended up becoming their choice, was were they going to run our $30.2 billion tax or spending budget, or were they going to pass a tax package to pay for the increase in discretionary spending of almost $1 billion? They didn't run the tax package because they didn't have the votes. The fact of the matter is what they ended up doing on December 23rd, which is they ran our spending bill at $30.2 billion so that the governor, in fact, had his third full budget on his desk, vetoed what happened in June, vetoed what happened in September. And that budget that went to the governor's desk in December, because the decision ended up being in the Senate, had every single Republican vote and had two Democratic votes as well. By not talking about how the fact that the Senate did not send a tax vote and, in fact, did vote on the House budget on December 23rd that put a full budget in front of the governor's desk is where you're not telling the true story.
Well, the bottom line, though, is that on December 23rd, the vote was not taken. This ended up being prolonged for three more months. So my question to you would be, was it worth it?
Clearly, the increase in the discretionary spending and the tax increases to go with it have allowed a sustained budget. The real question is, was it worth it? Was it worth it for the governor to veto a budget and liquor privatization and moving public pensions into 401ks back in June when it was all in front of him? We've delivered, since we've been in the majority, four on-time responsible budgets. We delivered a fifth one. The real question is was it worth it for the governor to veto in part or in whole? He did it in whole, the balanced budget on his desk in June, along with liquor privatization moving into the 21st century and a bill that took new hires into defined contribution plans. That's the real question. That's what the question is to whether it's worth it. We continued to work. We put a budget on his desk in September. We put a budget on his desk in December. And we put the supplemental here in March. And here's the thing. It is the governor's approach was unbalanced by well over $1 billion. And in addition, would have exacerbated the deficit by $1.5 billion. And he had no way to pay for it. And in addition, the taxpayers were asking, what's the objectives for the increased taxes?
Governor Wolf, as you know, is clearly not happy with this. He's pressed for tax increases to boost education funding, close the structural deficit, and he, as you heard...
No, this budget, the lower your spend... Come on, get off the...
Well, let me ask you this.
You keep using these pejorative terms that have no meaning because you don't know your facts.
Mr. Speaker, with all due respect, the governor is saying that the money that this budget claims to provide, the one that he is allowing to, that he's not going to veto, this latest budget, which will end the crisis, he's saying that the money it claims to provide really doesn't exist. So, Mr. Speaker, what citizens want to know is, does the money exist or doesn't it?
The governor wouldn't let it becoming law. The fact of the matter is the governor, you don't understand. The governor wanted $800 million more in spending on top of this. That would have killed. That's the exacerbation of the quote-unquote structural deficit. $800 million more in spending on top of what we did. We held the line on the spending, and the lower your spend in 15-16 is, the better off you're starting in 16-17. You're buying into just terms without any meaning because you don't know your numbers.
Well, Governor Wolf has vetoed the fiscal code, which is a companion bill to the state budget, often referred to as the budget user's manual. The governor says it has constitutional problems. What exactly are the consequences of the bill's rejection?
The governor has not articulated why he vetoed the fiscal code. It's not clear.
His spokesman called it an intrusion into the authority of the executive.
Do you know what that means? I don't know what it means. Do you know what it means?
They're saying that this bill is tying his hands and not allowing him to provide the funding that he thinks is necessary to balance the budget. That's what I take from it.
That's just buzz language, right? Those are buzzwords. The fiscal code is a completely appropriate bill that provides the programmatic distribution of dollars in the GA bill. That's all it does. Now, here's the thing. If that's not going to be the case, then the governor's going to have to use existing formulaic approaches as opposed to some of the changes that took place. By way of example, there's a bipartisan commission that for new money with respect to education dollars, it would have been sent out under the commission's formula. He wanted to, just by way of example, willy-nilly on his own send $486 per people to Philadelphia, but send $55 and $60 respectively to North Allegheny and Pine Ridgeland as way of examples. Now, the governor may act that he can continue to do that inappropriate, he'll find lawsuits challenging that, without a doubt. He'll find lawsuits challenging that. In fact, a number of entities were going to take it to court. But if he doesn't use the commission's formula, which was in the fiscal code, which is had bipartisan votes, I think it was a 15-0 vote, then he's going to have to follow what is in existing law, because that's the only other approach that you can take.
Looking forward, the governor is saying that crucial state services face cutbacks next year without a tax increase to wipe out a long-term deficit. Mr. Speaker, how do you plan to address the challenges of next year's budget?
Well, the key challenge that we did was keep the spend down for 15-16. If we would have done the governor's spend in 15-16 at $800 million, you would have exacerbated any deficit by $1.5 billion. This is annual budgeting. If you are responsible and you are fiscal stewards of people hard-earned tax dollars, is solving for X. As a number of the editorials across the state said, you can't be increasing spending discretionary dollars if you are in fact trying to hold the line on any gap between revenues and expenditures. Keep in mind, under the prior administration, when we did four on-time budgets that were fiscally responsible, you do know that we had revenue.
But have they addressed, let me ask you this, though, have they addressed the structural deficit in the budget, which has increased from year to year?
Well, let me ask you this. What are the cost drivers, and has the governor done anything to change the cost drivers? Now, I want to finish my last point.
Go ahead.
And then I'll address this.
All right, we've got about, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We've got about a minute left, so go ahead.
That's all right. We had revenues come in over expenditures for surpluses in each and every year, which then went towards the next fiscal year. The biggest key in the cost driver is the pension payment contributions. In this teacher pensions alone, our expenditure went up from $1.125 billion to about $1.725 billion, an increase of almost $600 million from 14-15 to 15-16, and that goes up again in 16-17. The governor vetoed pension reform, moving new hires to 401k plans. In addition, recently negotiated through arbitration, 12% increase for the corrections officers over 2 years' time. That's unsustainable.
So will we find ourselves...
Debt service under this governor, he wants to take it up, and under Rendell, it's going to increase by 8%. What are we doing to drive down the debt service? We have two bills in the Senate right now that would reduce the direction on a bar graph downward, not to upward, on debt service.
We are out of, Mr. Speaker.
The governor is on changing the long-term cost drivers because we're not.
Mr. Speaker, we're out of time. Mike Terzai, thank you for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. So long for now.
Thank you.